Jesus, mate. I had to pick up a water on the way. Feeling a little bit hungover after last night, mate. I was up late. I was actually spending the evening with a French man. I asked him if he played any video games. He said, "Oui."
Oh.
What's the mystery today?
It's a French family who died in April 2011.
Murdered? Died? Have they died? Is it a disappearance? Guys, we are here today to go through one of our favorite cases we've ever done on this channel. So sit back, bust open the popcorn,
and enjoy.
Let me quickly describe the family to you. Now, this was a very old aristocratic family, and we have Javier, the father. Mm-hmm. We've got Agnes, the mother. Mm-hmm. And then we also have four children as well. They go by the name Arthur, Thomas, Anne, and Benoit. Okay? And let's not forget, they also had two dogs.
Sounds like a happy family.
If you've ended up on this channel, chances are it's not a happy family anymore.
Now, the father's job was described quite vaguely, but most people did refer to him as a salesman.
Now, Javier, the father, also had a business advisor who goes by the name Gerard Corona. Now, this man is important for this story because he's a man who specialized in, quote, assisting foreigners with administrative and legal procedures in the USA and helped his clients to open foreign bank accounts and to obtain anonymous bank cards, allowing them to withdraw money anywhere in the world without leaving a trace.
Quite a job.
Now, obviously, as we mentioned at the beginning, this is a family that have died / murdered / disappeared. So it's time to go through the timeline of how everything unfolded.
July 2010, a year before the deaths. The father, Javier, started sending out emails to his friends saying that one day he may be blamed for any accident that happens. He wrote, "I hope that, even after a police investigation, my parents, brothers, and sisters will never be led to believe that I intentionally caused these accidents, even if the evidence is strong."
That isn't the best start to something. If you're already having to preempt everyone to let you know, yeah, guys, if there's anything suspicious about me that happens in the future, just know I didn't do
it. Such a weird thing to get. Like, if I just got that letter off you, I'd be like, what?
What's gonna happen, Cal? But the one thing that you could say is that maybe he's been threatened or told that he's gonna be framed and he's got that suspicion. So he's put that out there just so that maybe people will believe him.
Either that or some amazing planning. Something else.
Yeah, who knows? January 2011. After Javier's dad died, he ended up looking through his belongings and found a .22 caliber long rifle. Shortly after that, Javier ended up obtaining his firearms license. March 2011, Javier purchased rifle bullets and registered at a shooting range. Now, his two kids, Thomas and Benoit, also started to learn how to shoot. Javier had an instructor whom he asked many questions, and one of those questions being how to use a silencer. And on March 12th, he bought a silencer for his dad's rifle. Towards the end of March, he purchased items from a DIY store in central France, which was a 3.5-hour drive away from where he was. This purchase included bin liners and a box of adhesive plastic paving slabs.
Things ain't looking good. You don't just buy a silencer, you know? Like, it's such a... Come on.
Well, that's the main thing. You know what? There's even been talks about them just banning the ability to buy silencers in the US for this exact reason.
Because why would you need one? If you are in a situation where you need to defend yourself, your home's being treated, okay, you use your gun. You don't need it to be silent.
If anything, you'd want the opposite. We have the email that he sent out to begin with, which was kind of suspicious in the first place. But then the second thing is now that he's buying and asking his instructor about silencers. Red flag.
April 1st, 2011. Arthur never went to pick up his monthly wages at the restaurant he worked at, which was surprising as he was always on time. Javier also bought cement, a shovel, and a hoe. And on April 2nd, four bags of lime, 10 kilograms each, from different shops in the Nantes area. Quicklime is calcium oxide, and when it contacts water, as it often does in burial sites, it reacts with the water to make calcium hydroxide, also known as slaked lime. The heat produced from this activity will destroy many of the putrefying bacteria and dehydrate the body.
Let's be frank here. This guy has literally put together a shopping list of items that you need to kill a family and make sure nobody knows about it.
So I think that is to get rid of the smell.
Yeah.
Very handy.
I mean, the guy obviously, like, this is a well-prepared thing. This isn't like this isn't a heat of the moment thing. This is a thought out, planned.
A master plan.
Yeah.
Or is it?
Sunday the 3rd of April. The whole family ate in a restaurant in Nantes, then visited the cinema. That night, Javier left a voicemail on his sister's phone. We spent our Sunday evening in the cinema together, then in a restaurant, and we've just got back. I'm just calling to ask if it's too late to speak to you on the phone, and now I see it's gone to voicemail. But I was surprised. But I thought he'd only just arrived, so I was a bit surprised. Anyway, sending you my love. If it's not too late, call me back or send me a text, and I'll call you. Okay, I'm going to put the kids to bed. Say hi to everyone. See you soon. Maybe.
For the most part, that voicemail that was originally in French, but Chippo's wonderful voice, the translator for today.
Yeah, sorry guys.
It was fine until right at the end where he literally says, see you soon, maybe.
It sounded so ordinary and it was like, see you soon, maybe. I mean, he could just be saying like, oh, maybe I'll see you soon, maybe I won't.
Yeah, maybe we're deep in it too much because we know about
how
what
often,
happened.
How often do you see your sister if she don't live with you, you know?
Yeah,
it's just
true.
One of those. She could pop by tomorrow for some tea.
Yeah.
Might not see her for a couple of weeks.
The police believe that the family was murdered on April 3rd or 4th. On Monday, the 4th of April, the two kids, Anne and Benoit, didn't attend school as the school was informed that they were ill. But their friends got concerned when they couldn't even reach them via the phone. On April 5th, one of the children, named Thomas, was studying music at a friend's house and he planned to stay the night. But Javier phoned saying that he had to come home as his mother had been involved in a very serious cycling accident. Listen, you need to come back. Your mother has had a bicycle accident. She's in a hospital in a coma. We don't know if she's going to come out of it. It's very serious. You have to come home. So he ate dinner and went home. And his friend only received 3 texts saying, I'm not coming to yours. I'm ill. Really ill. I'm not coming to class. And the final message, I'm out of battery. My dad's looking for a charger for me. That night, Javier ate dinner with Thomas at a well-known expensive restaurant in Avril. The waiters explicitly remember Thomas feeling unwell and that Javier and Thomas barely spoke to each other during the entire evening.
It's all becoming a bit of a coincidence now as well, is the two kids were now ill, so couldn't go to school. Not only that, but then he said that to Thomas that there's a bicycle incident. It just seems like it's all a little too convenient. It's all happened at the same time. He's had to come home. His mum's at a bicycle, at a serious bicycle accident.
It's looking sketchy. It's looking sketchy.
Javier, the dad here, he's looking like main suspect right now.
Right now, at this moment.
On April 5th, a bailiff arrived at their house to try and recover a debt of 20,000 euros, but no one answered the door. That same day, claims by an employee of a hairdressing salon were made that Agnes was seen at the front of the house. She had come to pick up her wages and saw Agnes on the pavement on her phone at around 12:30. Pauline, who is Thomas's ex-girlfriend and classmate, said she spoke to him via Facebook on April 5th and that he seemed odd in how he was writing to her. During this week, the neighbors also heard the family dogs howling for 2 consecutive nights and then never heard from them again.
Let's not brush over the fact that there were weird messages from the Facebook on the 5th, by the way. So according to police, the murders happened on like the 3rd or the 4th.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Thomas's ex-girlfriend or classmate is getting messages on the 5th that didn't seem like him.
It's
almost as if the dad, Javier, is impersonating his kids so that no one's raising a suspicion.
She's probably thinking like, what is this boomer writing?
He's
probably trying his best to write like his son, but it's not looking it's not gonna work, is it?
And you can tell so easily when it's just like too many emojis or the wrong type of emojis.
Yeah,
it's obvious.
Spelling, all kinds of things.
The following day, Javier is seen making several return trips from the house to his car, loading the car with large bags. A neighbor also claims to have spoken to Agnes on this day. She said, on the 7th of April, I saw Agnes walking her dog. We spoke briefly, then I had to cut our chat short because I had an important appointment. The newspapers say the autopsies put her death on the 4th of April, but I'm almost convinced I saw her on the evening of Thursday the 7th because I know I didn't have much time to speak to her as I picked my son up from the childminder every Thursday evening. April 8th. Javier writes on an online Catholic forum site. He also sends an email to his brother-in-law saying, "Everything's fine, Bertram. You'll hear more detailed news soon through Christine. Bye for now. All the best, Javier." As well as sending a message to his sister and his mother. April 11th, the school receive a letter saying that Anne and Benoit will no longer be attending due to urgent professional changes, and the same was said in Agnes' resignation letter from the Catholic school. Between the dates of April 11th and 12th, he stays near Toulouse and uses his own credit card, and then again from April 12th to the 13th, he stays in Vaucluse and also uses his own credit card. On April the 11th, a neighbor noticed that the house had been barricaded, and on the mailbox it said, "Please return all correspondence to sender. Thank you." And after 2 days, she called the police.
Really strange that. Autopsy says he died on April the 4th, and the neighbor is claiming that she saw Agnes on the 7th of April, like 3 days later.
Yeah, that's not like, oh, I saw her maybe a few hours later or anything. We're talking a whole 3 days later.
Yeah.
She's claimed to have seen her, and she's almost certain that she saw her because she said that she didn't have much time to speak to her because she was picking up her son. So
it's stuck in her head. She remembered she was going to try and speak to her, but she didn't. And that's how she knows, but in her mind, that she saw Agnes.
That is the first, for me, really weird thing about this. So far, it's all been that, look, it's looking like the father, Javier, is the main suspect. There's no mystery in this.
But if she's coming about, still, 3 days after, it's a little bit sus.
April 13th. The police came to take a look at the house, and it all seemed too normal to them. Everything was in place, and some bed sheets had been removed, but they didn't see anything wrong. The neighbor, however, argued that only Javier's car was missing, but Agnes's was still there, and there was no way that the whole family and the dogs could fit into Javier's car. Thursday, April 14th, Javier withdraws 30 euros from an ATM and is captured by a surveillance camera. The next day, he checked out of the hotel, left his car behind, and crossed the parking lot carrying a bag with a long object, potentially the rifle used in the murders.
The letter. That is what happens next. Now, this unsigned letter, dated the 11th of April, 2011, apparently sent by the father, Javier, okay? And when you're reading through this letter, it's definitely from his POV, right? Mm-hmm. We're not going to read you out this whole letter because it is literally like 3 pages long and there's loads of stuff here. But what we will do is leave a link down below and you guys can check it out for yourself. And it's obviously in French, translated into English. But instead, we're going to summarize the letter for you guys. Now, this letter is super, super key for this just entire mystery because it reveals so much and was maybe his plan all along. So in this letter, he talks about how they had to leave for the US, right? Mm-hmm. And he says he won't be able to communicate with his like close friends and family for the next couple of years. This whole time, he claimed to be working for the DEA, right? Which is obviously a US agency, which is their Drug Enforcement Administration.
Plot twist.
Mate, imagine that. Like, all of a sudden he says, yeah, by the way, just so you know, I've been working undercover. That's what he says in this letter. He's an undercover guy that's been working amongst the French nightclubs, trying to figure things out. Like, this guy has an entire, like, if this story is true that he spoke about in this letter, it's absolutely nuts, right? Because in this letter as well, he also talks about some of the financial difficulties. Remember, there was a bailiff that turned up looking for 20,000 euros off of him. But he mentioned that their income wasn't enough and that he actually thanked a guy named Emmanuel and also Bertram for helping them during their financial difficulties.
So like, if you are working undercover for the DEA, would you be in, like, how would you be in such financial difficulty? I mean, that's not a bad job, is it? Sounds quite...
No, it sounded like it was almost like a part-time job that he had. The way he wrote it out in this letter made it seem like they just paid him like a bit of money, but it wasn't like a full-time job. Also in this letter, the reason why he was going over to the US was because he had apparently become a key witness in an upcoming trial, right, involving international drug trafficking kingpins, right? And they believe that his cover in France had been completely blown.
Okay.
Okay, so that is why he said he needs to go over to the US and he's going to be placed in what's known as the Witness Protection Program. It's quite a famous thing. Essentially, if you get into big trouble and you feel like your life is at danger because of the stuff that you know and that you're aware of or the stuff that you've seen, you would get placed into a Witness Protection Program. So he's saying him and his whole family are going over to the US to be placed in this program.
New identities, the law.
Everything. And not only that, but they're also not able to then contact friends and family. So this letter was really something for him to say, this is the last time you guys will hear from me. Because in this as well, he's also given out very specific instructions to a few of his friends. And it's like in bullet pointed things like, yo, you guys need to get this done for me while I'm away in my witness protection program. Now, we don't usually like interrupting a gripping mystery like this one, but this one is very important because it's our good friends over at Noom.
Yes.
Now, what they do, right, is a psychology-based approach to dieting, right? And what by that I mean, instead of just being like, no more of this and more of this, they take a more intelligent way to do it because it's all about creating habits. And they understand that if you take this more psychologically advanced way, wow, that sounded cool. I don't know if I can swear, but look, if they take it this way, it's more about creating something long-term rather than doing something short-term that might work for a little bit, but ultimately it's not gonna become part of your lifestyle. It's not gonna get you the results you want in a year's time. So that's what Noom comes in and does. It helps change your lifestyle and the way you view food rather than just a strict no and yes. Of course, we asked for some science behind this and they delivered. They said that more than 80% of users complete the program. More than 60% of users lose 5% or more of body weight and 60% of them keep the weight off for a year or more. So obviously that is super, super impressive, all right? Not only that, Chip, let's be honest, you have previously tried the traditional way, shall we say, of doing it, which is just the cutting stuff out, but this could be the new way. This could be how you achieve your goals. Mm-hmm. If you guys are interested in checking this out and you want to lose the weight for good, then you can sign up for your trial at noom.com/fellasmysteries. That's noom.com/fellasmysteries. All right, guys, have you heard that? I'm going to say it one last time for you. noom.com/fellasmysteries. That's noom.com/fellasmysteries. Don't say we don't nice you over here, okay, guys?
Now, a lot of the tasks that he did give his friends in the letter that he left behind was just stuff like, packing up the house, taking things to the dump, making sure that the valuables were okay, giving some gifts to certain friends.
But there was one main thing that stood out, and it was something that he referred to as Project Crystal. He told his friends, or some of them at least, to continue with Project Crystal, as it would allow us to have a comfortable income when we return. He said also in this letter that the official story that he's given out is that his family is moving to Australia. So if you guys could please share that across social media, that's a story I'm going with. But for my close friends, I'm actually off to the US for this witness protection program. So this letter, like I said, it's long, it's well thought out, and it just shows that it is so planned. You know what I mean? Like, you don't just write this on a whim. This is months of thinking about what your thing is going to be if you really have murdered your family.
Strange, though, that he tells him to continue with Project Crystal as it would allow us to have a comfortable income when we return, but you're not going to return. So yeah. What's the point of telling them?
But is that the thing? Is this just another thing to make it seem like he's definitely going to return? It's more legit.
I mean, if he has murdered his family, I imagine he didn't plan on anyone finding out, so...
April 15th, the police came back to the house and still didn't see anything suspicious. They came back again on the 18th, 19th, and 20th, and still found absolutely nothing suspicious. Although on April 21st, the police lieutenant found something under the terrace in the garden. And that day, the chief investigator was actually holding a press conference at the courthouse. He stated that the family's disappearance was unusual and that they were going to open an investigation into the case. The press conference was stopped as he had to answer an urgent phone call. He was told that while the police were digging under the terrace, they discovered large plastic trash bags that were bound with tape. Inside the bags were several bodies. They were wrapped in blankets and duvets, then tied up and put into the bags. The autopsy indicated that a drug found in sleeping pills was found in the children, but Agnes did not have drugs in her body. However, she did have a sleep apnea machine which helped her sleep. It was discovered that her machine stopped suddenly at 3 a.m. on the morning of April 3rd or 4th. It is believed that she was killed first and then the children. Each victim was killed by two bullets to the head. The bullets extracted from the bodies had been shot from a .22 long rifle. Surprisingly, the neighbors were not awoken by any gunshots, but it is believed that the killer was using a silencer.
Silencer.
Bro, like, what?
There it is.
This is it. I mean, like, realistically, it came from the .22 long rifle, mm-hmm. and they believed that the killer was using a silencer. And again, it lines up with the dates of the 3rd or the 4th. Like, bro, Javier, this is not looking good for you.
Yeah, he's been rumbled.
You have been. But you know what's interesting is every time something points towards him, I can't help but think about the first thing we spoke about when we mentioned that he sent out an email saying the thing like, oh, if anything suspicious happens, it wasn't me type of thing. Did he really just say that, like thinking that would do the job? Or was he genuinely feeling like someone was gonna try and set him up? But he went and bought like the silencer. He went and did all this stuff. It wasn't like someone else did it, shot the kids, and then just randomly blamed him.
And like, it's not like they would know to like buy the correct stuff to, like, how would they know, oh, if I buy a long rifle and a silencer, it's gonna make it look like it was him?
Yeah.
It's just a bit odd.
The murders were considered to be methodical executions. The victims were all in their pajamas, so it's believed that they were killed while they slept in their beds. Strangely, there was no trace of blood in the bedrooms. Also, there was no trace of blood in the living room, foyer or bathroom. There was no blood found on any walls, furniture or floors. Police were puzzled as to how someone could kill five people in a house and leave no trace of evidence behind, including blood splatter from a .22 rifle. There was no DNA or fingerprints either. It is also weird as by killing the sons, then the lineage is done and there would be no one left to carry his name, which is considered strange in the aristocratic world. A funeral was held where 1,400 people attended and the bodies were cremated. Javier was the only suspect, and on May 10th, an international arrest warrant was issued.
No trace of blood, not even a splatter. This, by the way, this crime didn't happen in like the 1980s or something where technology might not have been great. Bro, we're talking about 2011.
Just over 10 years ago, that's the technology is, you know, it was fantastic. There. It's there. There is.
They could have found. What you're
like
telling me?
Dexter, where
bro, straight out of Dexter.
I just don't get it. Like, there's got to be no. No DNA, nothing. Five people dead.
Where is the... That is the most baffling thing to me. Is it just like, there has to be one stain somewhere. Unless he covered up the whole house, like you said, in that Dexter style of like, you know, like see-through film, right? To make sure that... But then, surely, there would be lots of stuff for him to carry out.
Yeah.
Like, someone would have seen, like, oh, mate, he was carrying loads of red blood-stained sheets out of the house. Like...
This is the most professional business I've ever seen.
But that's what I mean. This surely that would be something of like a highly skilled, trained killer 100%. Would do.
I need this guy cleaning my flat.
Bro, that's for
what
real.
I'm saying.
April 2013. They began searching for Javier's body, but nothing was found. In July 2015, a journalist was sent a photo of Arthur and Benoit, and on the back of the photo was written, "I'm still alive." 2018. Police raided a monastery in the town that he was last in, and the police couldn't really talk to the monks as the monks there took a vow of silence, but it turns out it was all just a mistaken identity anyways. October 2019, a man named Guy Zhao was detained at Glasgow Airport. He was flying from Charles de Gaulle Airport with his wife to Glasgow. And the French police were unable to stop him on time, so they asked the Scottish police to detain him when they landed. His fingerprints were a partial match, but then a DNA test confirmed that this man wasn't the man they were after. He was released after 26 hours of solitary confinement. In July 2020, Unsolved Mysteries did an episode on this, and the producer said, So we're hoping he's catchable if he's alive. Because of Netflix reach, global reach, or even national reach, they received many tips after the episode aired. After some digging, the police found that he wasn't living the perfect life he claimed to have. According to friends, during the last 10 years from 2001 to 2011, Javier was in a downward spiral of failure. Javier claimed to be a business owner, creating successful companies, traveling across France, and being a busy businessman. The truth was that his companies were never successful. Shortly before the murders, he discovered that they were almost out of money and would have to leave their house and face serious consequences. As a result, he would be exposed as someone unsuccessful.
Police had a bit of a howler with old guy Zhao. The poor guy was a case of mistaken identity. It was only a partial match. I feel like that's quite
still,
a reach.
That's still quite interesting, though. Fingerprints were a partial match, but I mean...
It's a bit harsh. Poor guy went through 26 hours of solitary confinement. Like, that's brutal.
Yeah, like, surely a little bit of compensation for my boy, you know? Like,
yeah, but... Anyways, you know, fast forward onto that. And then we have the truth about Javier's sort of actual financial issues. Turns out that he was never actually that good at business in the first place. And he was a bit of a stinker, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he's sending his kids to private school. And like, if you're not, like, that's so stupid if you actually ain't making good money.
Yeah, but the thing is, the whole thing about his family is it's the appearance of being successful, having a lot of money, or at least being able to like provide well for your family.
Hardworking businessman. He's done well. He's got the, he wanted the, well, he's showing he had the perfect life, but he didn't.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So.
But why murder your family if you did it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Your family because you're unsuccessful.
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe that's why though. Maybe he was literally at the point where he couldn't afford for his kids to go private school anymore. Yeah. He couldn't afford, you know, like for his wife to be living the life that she was living. So really the only way for him to save face and still keep this reputation, maybe he was just super egotistical, was the fact that he was like, if I just kill my family.
If I just kill my family,
I ain't got to pay for private school, right? My wife doesn't need to lead the life that she lives now. And I can just say we all pissed off to a different country and everyone will think, oh, well, he's classmate. He was working undercover all this time. What a cool guy.
And then he could just go live his life up in whatever country he's in. He's probably got a new missus, new car.
Well, we have to remember how at the beginning we spoke about his business advisor who was really good at being able to set up his clients with people, being able to spend money with no trace. Mm-hmm. He's got the contacts to sort of disappear off
does
the face of the
does
planet.
Does tie in. He could use him. Yeah,
exactly.
Pay passport, all that kind of business.
Now, the police believe he may have committed suicide. His last seen area is surrounded by cliffs and mountains. The police searched this area for weeks, but no trace of him was found. Usually with family suicide, the person commits suicide near the scene of a crime. Now, others believe he used his advisor, Gerard Corona, to obtain anonymous bank cards and assist with changing identities. His bank cards were not used after April 14th and 15th. Another theory is that since the DEA were mentioned as a causation, the bodies were cremated very quickly after they were found. Maybe the bodies were fake and the family is still alive. Javier's mum and sister don't believe the bodies are those of the family and genuinely believe that they're false bodies put there whilst the family is actually in America.
So what you're trying to tell me, Chip, is that there's a theory that the bodies there were fake, right? Mm-hmm. And that actually this whole thing was just a decoy to make people think that they're dead so nobody chases after them in the US?
Yeah, maybe they were really involved in some serious stuff. It could explain why there was not an ounce of blood anywhere or DNA, and that's because, you know, they're not dead. So there
is no, it's not a real body.
They can't have any of their blood there.
I've got a question, though. With the autopsy, unless they were told, like, you know, there's like a higher person in the police force that come down and said, this is the autopsy you'll hand over.
Yeah, I guess there is a protocol when deaths are faked, right?
Yeah, especially by a government. But my next thing is, has the DEA come out and said, by the way, guys, he wasn't working for, we've never heard of this guy before.
Yeah.
Or is that just standard protocol?
Would
they come out and say that anyways?
Yeah, is that, oh, wow. But another strange thing, right? So let's say the DEA have set this up and it, you know, to make sure they really, truly can disappear. Why make it look like Javier, who is working with them, is the killer?
Yeah.
Why use the silencer, the same rifle?
Yeah.
Why make it look like he, you know, you would have made it look like someone else done it. Now if he's working for him, they've essentially just framed him.
What I mean. Maybe that's what he was saying all along from the beginning email that he said. He was there like, look, if my cover might be blown here and they're just going to fucking do off my family and say it was me. I don't know. Look, this is a conspiracy rabbit hole.
This is insane, yeah.
And it actually gets even worse. Listen to this.
The hole that the bodies and dogs were buried in was likely to have been beyond the physical capabilities of one man who was said to have back problems. 3.25 cubic yards or 5 tons of earth were apparently dug out with a single shovel, with only 4 feet of headroom, meaning that the work must have taken place while crouching. Despite the huge movement of soil, no trace was found in the garden, in which case the perpetrator would have had to have used a tarpaulin, displaced 5 tons of earth by hand, and left absolutely no trace of this soil. Furthermore, Christine claims that Javier had neck and back problems and would not have been physically capable of such a task. Finally, it is concluded that due to the low headroom, the perpetrator would likely have banged their head and rubbed their hair on the ceiling repeatedly, but no human skin cells, blood, or DNA were found there.
Chip, this has just gone a complete 180 for me. This whole time I was there convinced Javier was the obvious killer.
It's nuts, man. Like, there is really good stuff that points to him not doing it. Like, that it would be really hard for him to pull this off.
Editor Fish, please put a picture of what 5 tons of soil looks like. Be aware that that would take someone months to do by hand. And not only that, people, his neighbors, things that that's got to go somewhere.
I was about to say, how has nobody spotted, you know, Javier digging this massive freaking hole in the ground?
The only thing I can think of is that this was done previously before the house was built, and he's just found it. He's gone underneath and he's gone, oh my God, there's a massive hole under my terrace. Maybe I could put it there.
Because even still with the timings, like even the family might have seen him digging a hole because it's going to take a long time.
But it's going to take ages. Like they said, it's with a single shovel. So that's literally the only thing I can think of is that this hole was here before.
Is the boy innocent?
Was he set up this whole time? Anyways, guys, we want you to let us know. Let us know in the comments what you think. Did Javier kill his family and do a runner? Right, because there's still an arrest out for him.
The photo as well that he sent with the name, I'm alive on the back.
I'm still alive. Let us know down below. Guys, if you did enjoy this episode, what do they need to do, Chip?
Turn on notifications, follow us on the Spotify because you can listen to the episode over there. And of course, we will catch you next Monday.
Yeehaw!